this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's now legal for qualified patients to purchase medical marijuana from dispensaries in Ohio. But for researchers, the story is still quite different.
Even though in the state of Ohio, medical marijuana is legal, the federal laws overrule the state laws. And so from the DEA's perspective, it's all Schedule One. So if you told the DEA, hey, I'm doing research in Ohio because medical marijuana is legal, the DEA theoretically could take away your license to prescribe any scheduled substance.
That's Dr. Michael Privatera. He's the director of the Epilepsy Center at the University of Cincinnati, whose clinical trials led to the first marijuana-derived drug approved by the FDA. That was back in June of 2018. And even though their research used a concentrate of pure CBD, a non-psychoactive ingredient of marijuana, their research required the same stringent security measures as drugs like LSD or heroin, because it's derived from the cannabis plant.
It's really challenging to do a study that with a Schedule One drug. It was really the most challenging study I've ever done for a new medication.
His study used almost exactly the same CBD you can now purchase over-the-counter, seemingly everywhere. That availability is partially because later that same year, Congress passed a farm bill which legalized the production and sale of hemp, or the cannabis that contains less than 0.3% of THC, the psychoactive ingredient known to get users high when smoking marijuana. But according to the DEA, all other forms of cannabis are still a Schedule One controlled substance, which means for researchers, medical study of this plant will remain a difficult legal landscape.
It is really a kind of a tricky situation when the federal laws are completely at odds with many of the state laws.
So let's try to break it down and see if we can get a better understanding of all this. Joining me now to help clarify some of the ongoing confusion surrounding marijuana law and how law enforcement will address these changing laws are Cincinnati Fraternal Order of Police President Sergeant Dan Hills. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
And we also have with us University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Assistant Professor in the Addiction Sciences Division, Dr. Latrice Montgomery. Dr. Montgomery, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Questions, comments, we're live. Join us at 513-419-7100. You can email your comments to talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. Let's start with you, Dr. Montgomery. I'd like to have some terms defined up front, and we want to. I understand that some activists who support the legalization of the drug outright, in particular, are strict about which words we can use to describe certain things. So let's talk about cannabis, hemp, and marijuana, and THC, and CBD. Help us understand what those words are and how we should use them.
Yes. Yeah, so as you mentioned, there are tons of terms that are out there, and so, simply put, cannabis is the plant. And so when you hear people talk about cannabis, they're talking more broadly about the plant. But when you think about things like marijuana, hemp, et cetera, those are more kind of species of the plant. And so particularly when we talk about differences between marijuana and hemp, with marijuana, we're talking about 0.3% THC or more, whereas with hemp, we're talking about 0.3% THC or less. And THC is the psychoactive component that's in marijuana. And that's the one that we most commonly hear about. But there are hundreds of components and cannabinoids within the cannabis plant and within marijuana. And CBD is also another common compound that's also found within the cannabis plant. And it's actually a derivative of hemp, which is, again, has the lower levels of THC. So, again, lots of terms that are out there. Cannabis is actually commonly used when we talk about it from a scientific standpoint. But again, it's not necessarily agreed on. And actually, there was a recent study that just came out just a few days, as a matter of fact, a few days ago, and it actually did where they actually looked to see how do people talk about marijuana and cannabis and do their views different based on whether you say marijuana or cannabis laws or marijuana laws. And what they found was that there wasn't much difference in terms of public opinion, in terms of what people call it. I think it for me, I see it more of as a scientific debate. I hear it more among my colleagues than I do in the general public.
So more scientific than cultural.
Exactly.
Because it was that's what I had heard from a very close friend of mine who relies on what I call medical marijuana. I think that's what we typically use in the media is medical mm-hmm. marijuana, and certainly in legislation and when we're covering lawmakers and their positions on it. But this friend of mine was adamant that you have to refer to it as cannabis, that there's some type of history with the word marijuana mm-hmm. and possibly some racist connotations mm-hmm. to that. But that might be a topic for another show. I find it interesting that people who are researching, whichever term you're using, mm-hmm. this drug, mm-hmm. this product, this plant, that the way it's enforced from a legal perspective can impact that. So how does the Schedule I category impact what you're doing?
Exactly. So with Schedule I drugs, basically that means that there is no accepted medical value or and it has a high potential for abuse. So with that, that means that there are tons of regulatory barriers. So for example, if someone wanted to go and test a biological marijuana or cannabis product, there is a long process that you have to go through. First, you have to go through the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and there's some paperwork that needs to be filled out there. Then you would go through the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and they have their own set of paperwork that you need to fill out. And also they have the marijuana supply that you would need to be able to receive marijuana for that particular research. Once you receive approval from them, you also have to receive approval from the Drug Enforcement Administration because they have licenses and registration that they need to make sure that your site is appropriate and that you have, you know, places where you can actually store the marijuana, safety, things of that nature. This process can take months and even years to get done. And then also there's state rules as well. So depending on what state you live in, you also have to get certain certificates to be able to do Schedule I research around these particular drugs. And so oftentimes what people do is they kind of move on into a different area of research because it's just so difficult to get through all of those barriers.
Sergeant Hills, your industry is also being impacted by this shifting landscape of the way marijuana is discussed and now used openly in the marketplace. And I'm wondering what impact that has had for you. You're a municipal law enforcement officer in a city that has decriminalized certain possession amounts and in a state that now allows medical marijuana to be purchased. What impact has that had on you and others in your line of work?
Well, my role, none at all, because I'm in a different role. I'm not actually out in a law enforcement role, but for the officers out on the street, maybe not as much as you think. And when you talk about decriminalization, I do want to make a slight correction there. It's been depenalized, not decriminalized.
I accept that. I apologize for that.
No, that's correct. No problem. The code still exists. It's still, as you and the doctor were just talking about, still a federal crime, still a Schedule I crime. It's still against the law. The possession of it is against the law in the state of Ohio and still against the law in the city of Cincinnati. What city of Cincinnati has done is said under a certain amount, it's going to be depenalized. And that's created some confusion because of the way our due process works. Originally, they were citing folks for this possession, and if there's no hearing or no payout, it was just going on their records. Well, what if I wanted to say that I did not possess this marijuana? Or what if I wanted to say, just as the doctor was talking about, what if I wanted to say that this was hemp, that this was not marijuana? They weren't even going to test it anymore because it wasn't penalized. Well, that wasn't fair to the individual if they wanted their due process to say either A, it wasn't marijuana, or B, it wasn't mine, it belonged to somebody else.
So it has somewhat muddied the waters?
Very much so. But some of that's been corrected already. For right now, when you're given a non-penalized citation, they are no longer noting that on your criminal record. Now, I still wonder, what if you're going for, you know, a high-level federal job or something of that nature? Would there be able to be research and find that you had been cited in this non-penalized thing? It still would be something that I would want. If I were cited, I would want my due process so I could maybe say this wasn't my marijuana, or again, back to the doctor's point, this wasn't even marijuana. This was a product that does not contain THC and isn't made to make me high. We even have our police officers right now are quizzing me about the CBD oil, wanting to know whether or not they can use it, whether or not it'll trigger a positive test. And if it does trigger a positive test, how will that, you know, affect our employment status? Because there is a belief, correct me if I'm wrong, doctor, that CBD oil can be used to help arthritis, hands, and all sorts of different things. So this is a very quickly changing landscape about how we look at cannabis. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the lesson, doctor. How we look at cannabis and its different derivatives. Is that the right way of saying it?
Yes.
It sounds like both of you in your respective fields are going to have to stay on top of this ever-evolving situation. And we've only got about a minute left, but I want to ask, you know, what have you seen as a researcher, Dr. Montgomery, about the public perception of the drug, if anything? I know you might not be looking at that in the lab, but what are you seeing?
In terms of the public perception,
I suppose.
Of products,
you know, I mean, maybe 25 years ago, people thought differently about cannabis, mm-hmm. and is it changing because of some of the research that's coming out of different academic areas?
I would say so, and I think it's a bit tricky because I think the laws and the policies are moving a bit quicker than the research. So, in some ways, I think it's actually with the legalization of marijuana across different states, both medical and recreational. In some ways, I think it's actually helping the research because it kind of shows, you know, more so the importance of it. But in terms of the public perception, I think because the legalization has increased over the years, the perception of harm has decreased. And in some ways, that might be okay for certain aspects of it, but we don't have the research to say, for example, if someone is using low amounts of marijuana versus someone that's a heavy user, we don't really know what the differences are there. Mm. A lot of the research we focused on is focused more so on heavy users. So
I wish we would have had more time for this. We had breaking news, but thank you for being flexible and giving us the few minutes that we could still allot for this. And thank you for coming in, Dr. Montgomery and Sergeant Hills. We appreciate it. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.